Welcome everyone to our January council meeting. We will be meeting obviously virtually. You're all in the virtual world. Just a couple of reminders that doing Zoom, I know it's been a while since we did a full virtual council meeting, but some of you should have practice now since we've been doing virtual committee and AP meetings. Just remember to raise your hand to speak, mute your own self. While we can mute you, it's easier if you just do the muting on your own end. And that's about it for just general Zoom instructions. If there are any issues, please let us know, either text, call, text staff, and we'll try to get you straightened out. I'd like to start off today's meeting, unfortunately, to express our sympathies and condolences to the Williams family. As some of you may have heard, that Tom Williams unfortunately lost his life over the weekend. Tom has been a leader in the Southern New England fishing fleet. He did participate in many of our fisheries, as well as the Mid-Atlantic Council's fisheries. I just want to express the condolences and our thoughts that go out to his family. He was based out of Connecticut. He lived in Rhode Island, the fishing vessel heritage. So if you would just bear with me and just take a moment of silence, just send your thoughts out to his family. Thank you. Thank you for that. On to continuing my report, just a few things to note. The Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel, our full panel meeting was scheduled for 2 weeks ago. We've actually pushed it. We will be meeting in 2 weeks now in Virginia at the Virginia Institute of Marine Sciences, and we thank VIMS for hosting us. So anyone that is interested, please feel free to log on or come join us in Virginia, and we will be there for February 12th meeting. Additionally, as many of you know, there are new 4 council seat openings at this time. The applications are online. What the council is looking for is all at-large seats, so residency is not a primary requirement. The state of Maine, the state of New Hampshire each have 1 seat, and the state of Massachusetts has 2 seats. If you are interested, anyone out there is interested in applying to be on the council, you can talk to your Marine Fisheries Division, and nomination packages are due to the National Marine Fisheries Service by March 15th. So if anyone's interested, you would probably, for Maine, you would reach out to Carl Wilson. For Massachusetts, you would reach out to Dan McKiernan or Kelly Whitmore. And for New Hampshire, you would reach out to Renee Zobel. And finally, I just want to point out the XCOM did meet January 14th as we talked about general aspects of the council, and I will kick it over to Dr. O'Keefe to give a more in-depth presentation on XCOM and as part of her report. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Good morning, everyone. As Dan mentioned, just a reminder, if you have any issues with Zoom or the technology, there is the chat and the help desk that you can use online, and please feel free to reach out to staff. And again, just a reminder to council members, we're asking you to use your own self-mute, so when you're not speaking, please be sure to be on mute. Thank you. My 2026 January Executive Director's Report. Next slide, please. I'm going to provide a bit more detail about our grants and budget status in this update. So starting off, our primary operating funds are from the 2025 to 2029 Cooperative Agreement Award. The total award across all years has been reviewed and approved at $21,690,804. However, funding is contingent upon availability from Congress and at the discretion of the Department of Commerce. And I'll explain a little bit more about this as we move through. So in calendar year 2025, we received 99% of our proposed budget for a total funds of $4,848,761. The president has signed the fiscal year 26 Department of Commerce budget, which includes funds for councils. There is a slight increase in the council budget line, but we don't have full information quite yet on what the total 2026 council budget will be. We anticipate understanding more about that in the coming weeks. As I've mentioned on the slide here, expected funding drops. Actually, we received our first funding drop, so an update since this presentation was posted. We got our first drop of calendar year 2026, actually on Sunday. This drop included $1,066,615. We do anticipate the next drop to cover the remaining calendar year 2026 funds to arrive in mid to late March. So the split on these is we received approximately 25% of the 2026 funds in this initial drop that we received on Sunday, and we anticipate about 75% of the budget to come later in the spring. Our Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA award, that grant was a total of $2,494,982. We have received 100% of these funds. We've been working on this the initiatives and off this grant for all of calendar year 2025. The current end date of this award is March 31st, 2027, but we will be requesting a no-cost extension through December 31st, 2027, so we'll be working on the IRA initiatives for all of 2026 and 27. And the 2020 to 2024 cooperative agreement award that had a no-cost extension through 2025 is now complete, and we are in the process of closeout on that award. Next slide. So to try to bring a little bit more clarity around how these cooperative agreements work, we put in a proposal for 5 years of funding. That proposal is reviewed by NOAA. It was approved at our requested budget level, but again, the budget is contingent on Congress and at the discretion of the Department of Commerce. Obviously, we had in the last several years, we've had multiple continuing resolutions, and so our budget that includes some inflation over years isn't always realized. So for example, in this first column, year one federal, our federal proposed funds was $4,874,672. The realized funds was about 99% of that, with a difference of just about $26,000. Those blue highlighted boxes are the proposed funds for the following years. However, these are subject to change annually, either increase or decrease at the discretion of Congress and the Department of Commerce. Next slide. Providing a year-end update on our existing cooperative agreement award. This is all funds expended through December 31st, 2025. Due to some budget uncertainty throughout 2025 calendar year, we implemented several cost-saving measures across most of the budget lines to ensure minimal or no impacts on staffing, benefits, and council activities. We did try to plan for up to a 30% budget reduction because there was just a lot of uncertainty. Due to this, we paused several of our equipment, IT, website activities, and upgrades. We have now rescheduled those activities, and we're planning to spend several of the paused funds in the first quarter of 2026. So you can see here that there's a surplus in the majority of our budget lines, and the overall surplus at the bottom there in the green box of $1.3 million. I will note that we have been dipping into this surplus in the month of January, as we just received the funding drop on Sunday, so covering operating expenses in the first 3 weeks of January, we took out of this surplus. Next slide. Moving on to interagency updates and meetings. The executive directors met in December, and the major outcome of that meeting was a letter that was sent to the Secretary of Commerce and NOAA Assistant Administrator, focused on the need for timely review and approval of council actions. The NRCC met on January 13th in an intersessional session to discuss regional budget and capacity, 2026 work priorities, and 2027 stock assessment schedules. At that meeting, Mr. Pentney provided a presentation on NOAA's framework for narrowing the scope of NIMS management and science. I'll be expanding on this as we go through the presentation. The executive directors met again with NOAA headquarters staff last week to further discuss this initiative and the application of what's being called the risk value matrix. Next slide. So the risk value matrix process, as presented by NOAA to the executive directors and regionally by Mr. Pentney to the NRCC, the stated goal is to provide a framework for narrowing the scope of NIMS management and science. There are some baseline assumptions that NOAA has expressed to the councils. that they cannot continue to manage the 500-plus stocks or complexes currently in the FMPs. This was first presented at the May 2025 CCC meeting, and I've included it in presentations to the council around regional science and management. Another assumption is that there will be impacts to changing how NIMS manages fisheries. Those impacts will be felt by NOAA staff, the councils, fishing industry, and communities. There's a desire to balance national consistency and interoperability with regional flexibility while maintaining accountability. And there's a desire for creation and application of this regional risk value matrices and with co-development between science centers, regional offices, and councils. And it's been stated that scientists should be involved with management change proposals and managers should be involved with science change proposals. Next slide. I've presented this after the May CCC meeting, but now we have a bit more information. This is what is being called the risk value matrix, and it's trying to characterize our managed stocks and complexes on the scale of high risk, high value on one end, down to low risk value on the other end. The value categories that NOAA has identified are commercial, recreational, and social. And the risk categories include relative stock status, susceptibility to environmental phenomenon, proven impact on the ecosystem, and the effectiveness of management. Next slide. NOAA laid out 9 steps for councils to use in applying the matrix. And this is councils in coordination with regional science centers and regional offices. The first step being articulate the objectives. NOAA articulated those for us, which is narrowing the scope of science and management. Developing regional working groups, and that's highlighted because I have a little bit more information to provide. These regional working groups will be acquiring data, quantifying risk and value qualitatively as needed, then placing the stocks or fisheries within that matrix and identifying possible management changes, and going through a review and possible adjustment within the matrix to account for cultural value, international management approaches, and overall management effectiveness. The matrices will be submitted by each region to NOAA, who will then combine for a national level matrix, and there'll be a discussion around prioritization of stock assessments and analytical approaches, calculation of data requirements, prioritizing data collection needs, and overall considering if there's any FMP or database changes needed. NOAA has requested completion of the matrix from each region by April 3rd of this year. Next slide. So at the regional level, as I mentioned, Mr. Pentney walked through this presentation to the NRCC earlier this month. We had an initial discussion about how we would develop the working group. There will be representation from all of the NRCC organizations, including the Regional Office, Science Center, both councils, and the commission. We want to consider expertise and representation across the value and risk categories, so management, including policy and regulatory, science, so surveys, assessment, and fishery information, and socioeconomics, so considering our risk policy, community impacts, and cultural importance. Our plan is to confirm the working group membership, develop a work plan, and initiate completion of the matrix over the next several months. It's been deemed kind of by our region, and specifically our council will not be able to complete this by the April 3rd deadline if we want to do this in a thoughtful manner. So we are working collectively, executive directors from all of the regions, to convey to NOAA that if this truly is to be developed jointly and managers involved in the decisions, that we'd need more time to do this thoughtfully. Next slide. A brief update on Executive Order 14276. The second public comment period closed on December 15th. There was an additional comments for a total tally of about 700 unique comments on the executive order. Some of the major categories of comments fell into marine monuments, regulatory changes, and interagency coordination. The next steps for our council, again, this is an update from when this presentation was posted. The councils now have received the updated list of public comments. We got this on Friday. Council staff is working to review and determine if the public comments require any changes to our previously submitted work plan. And the link here in the presentation is to our council letter dated September 30th, which was our response and our work plans related to the executive order. If any changes are required, this would come back to the council to review in April, and we would submit a revised work plan by the end of April. And separately, NMFS is identifying activities or actions that could be taken up directly through the agency or the secretary and other policy initiatives that aren't related to council activities. Next slide. The SSC met last week to consider the council's motion on Whitehake. You can see on the slide, the council's motion was to preliminarily approve the Whitehake OFLs and ABCs for fishing years 2026 to 2030, as recommended by the SSC from their October meeting, and to request the SSC consider setting those ABCs based on 75% FMSY, taking into consideration the council's risk policy and rebuilding plan. And the council would accept any revised SSC recommendations without discussion for adoption in Framework 72. So the reason I'm presenting this in the executive director's report is that the SSC did consider this in the term of reference, and you can see on the slide there is basically they considered exactly what the council requested. Next slide. The SSC reconfirmed their recommended OFL and ABC for Whitehake for fishing years 26 to 30 based on a fishing mortality rate of 70% FMSY, reflecting the current rebuilding plan. So the recommendation on the table on the screen is the table that was previously presented to the council, and we will now include these values in Framework 72 for submission to the agency. Next slide. And I just wanted to remind council members of we have some remand criteria for sending things back to the SSC included in our council operations handbook. In this case, with Whitehake, this was not a remand, it was a request for reconsideration. However, the rationale that the SSC included in their report was based on following the council's ABC control rule, the council's rebuilding plan around Whitehake, and not feeling that there was any failure of the committee to follow the terms of reference, no errors in fact or omission. And the committee did follow standard operating procedures. Next slide. Finally, I just wanted to provide a quick update on the status of several council actions. I won't go into the details here, but I wanted to highlight that we're seeing some increased deficiencies on the council and GARFO staff side, and very efficient timing from council final action to preliminary submission, regulation, deeming, and final submission. I want to say thank you to council staff and GARFO staff for working very, very efficiently on these timelines to ensure, as best we can, minimize any impacts from delayed implementation of measures at the start of fishing years. However, where we're seeing some issues and decreased efficiencies is around the proposed rule, public comment, and final rule, and into implementing measures. And this is why the executive directors collectively wrote a letter to the Secretary of Commerce and NOAA Fisheries Assistant Administrator emphasizing the importance of timely review and implementation, because of delays in the start of the fishing year can have extreme economic impacts to the fishery and the communities. I do want to mention that we were not the only reason that we're the region that was facing some of these delays. Groundfish Framework 69 and herring specifications were specifically challenging for our region, but these lengthy delays have been happening nationwide with all of the other council regions as well. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dr. O'Keefe. Questions? I see Ms. Griffin.
Sorry, probably not a question, but if you go back to the risk policy matrix slides, maybe the one I think that was the 9-step. So I'm glad that the councils kind of are all in agreement that that is an unreasonable timeline, because as you said, we want to do this thoughtfully. But I'm that first line, narrow scope, I'm just concerned that that continues to be the lens that a lot of people are looking at this, instead of, we spent a lot of time at our holistic strategic planning discussions to date talking about optimization. And as you say, thinking thoughtfully, I think that's the lens that we need to be approaching this. So just thank you for laying this out, and I hope we have that time.
Thank you, Melanie. Next up, Jeff Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Sure can, Jeff.
Okay, great. Thanks. I just wanted to follow up with a comment and a question on the risk value matrix as well. I agree with what Melanie just said. I think the April 3rd deadline is wildly unrealistic, and rushed work does not lead to good work. So I hope that we get an extension on that. It was a little unclear to me, Dr. O'Keefe, on who exactly is responsible for filling out the matrix. So could you just talk a little bit more about who's supposed to answer these 9 questions?
Sure, thank you. So the way that we're approaching it right now is collectively through the NRCC. As I mentioned, Mr. Pentney provided a version of this presentation at our January 13th meeting, and our next steps are to identify working group members who can contribute across the objectives of this. So, you know, more than just stock assessment scheduling, but also considering management objectives and socioeconomic and sociocultural issues as we try to understand where the stocks are going to fit. So where we are right now is forming that work group. And as we get that up and running, I think the NRCC will be developing a process of how we're going to address it. We've been asked to do this at the regional level, but also there's been a request that each council submit something. So I think there's value in us working through the NRCC as we share NOAA resources of the center and the regional office. But obviously our council will be working towards prioritizing or evaluating our stocks compared to the Mid-Atlantic Council and compared to Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. So it's kind of a multi-tiered process. And frankly, I don't have a lot of detailed information on this for you guys today, as this was dumped pretty recently and we are trying to work out the next steps. So I will try hard to keep people informed. Thank you for the feedback and agreement that April 3rd is an unrealistic deadline. But we don't want to hold off on updates until your next April council meeting. So there may be updates coming through correspondence over the next several months. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you for that. One of the things I was curious about was the relationship with the Mid and Atlantic states. So you touched on it. I won't belabor that point, except to say again, April 3rd is an unrealistic deadline. I hope we can get more time. The other question I have, and I'm not sure if it's for you, Dr. O'Keefe, or Mr. Pentney, or someone else, but I'm curious if the agency believes that this shift will require any changes to the Magnuson Act, or whether this type of narrowing of scope of science and management can be done under our current statutory framework that we operate under.
Mr. Pentney, do you have a response?
My understanding, based on what I've heard, which is about the same level of detail that Kate and the other executive directors have heard, is that the expectation is that we would be operating within the construct of the Magnuson Act. So flexibilities that we already have under the national standards for, delegate or designating some fishery stocks as ecosystem component stocks rather than, actively managed stock complexes like we do with the skate complex, although maybe, taking that a step further in terms of assessments and setting ABCs and making overfishing determinations, but those kinds of approaches, as well as considering whether a stock continues to be a stock in need of conservation and management, which is kind of step one under the Magnuson Act for actively managing it, assessing it, and implementing regulations. So I think those are kind of the three aspects that we could be looking at down the road. And then it's maybe the fourth approach is something that we've already done, actually, both councils and certainly the New England Council with the most recent efficiency action, where you look at how frequently do we need to set specs. Which then, of course, drives both the science enterprise in terms of how frequently assessments need to be done, and how frequently on the management side we need to be, you know, conducting rulemaking. And so I think there are some flexibilities that, you know, there are a lot of flexibilities that we currently have under the Magnuson Act that we could be looking more closely at through this exercise.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. That's all I got.
Thank you, Jeff. Jackie O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Kate, for the presentation. So I just have one quick comment on Whitehake. I just really wanted to thank the staff and the Groundfish PDT for how much work they put into the council's request and reconsideration to the SSC. The outcome is what it is at this point, but I really appreciate the hard work and excellent memo that the PDT had sent to the SSC in their discussion and deliberation. So thanks to staff on that. And then I have two questions. One, thank goodness about appropriations and funding. And I'm curious, other than IT upgrades and some things that may have been put aside by the council in light of the need to be conservative and not know about the future funding status, will the executive committee be reviewing any other additional items that were put aside or any additional cost savings that maybe don't necessarily need to go as far as maybe they did? Will you be reconsidering kind of some of the council actions that were taking place in light of that uncertainty? So that's number one. And then number two question is on this risk value matrix process. I would really like to see the opportunity for the council to have, appreciate the update, but it would be great to have council deliberation and consideration within our managed stocks in New England about what this is going to look like as a region. So I don't support the April 3rd deadline. I hope that that'll be reconsidered and it'll provide for an opportunity for the council to be able to, the New England Council, to weigh in on the NRCC of some recommendations. So hopefully we can have a discussion about that at our April council meeting. I appreciate you recognizing the need to have more regional engagement as well. So so those are my two, is the NOAA risk policy matrix and then the funding. If you feel that there's going to be any reconsideration of the budget in light of the appropriations that have gone forward.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie. So definitely on the budget question. So you may recall I mentioned a couple of times at council meetings last year that we had implemented some what I was calling austerity measures. And that was due to just the high level of uncertainty around the budget, whether or not there was going to be continuing resolutions, impacts of government shutdown, and the like. So with the news about this year's budget, we can lift a lot of those austerity measures. And I will be going back to the executive committee following this meeting to reconsider some of the things that we've talked about, like half-day stipends, more webinar meetings, and consider where we can maintain fiscal responsibility, but loosen the knot a little bit. On the risk value matrix, yes, the executive directors collectively nationwide have, you know, discussed the extreme importance of allowing the council, all of the councils, to weigh in on this. April 3rd doesn't work for our council. It doesn't work for any council. A lot of councils are meeting either this week or next week or within the next couple of weeks, and there's nothing ready to bring to the councils to respond to at this point. And then most councils don't meet again in full before this April 3rd deadline. So we're not at this moment looking at a specific date and not trying to negotiate an extension around this. We're more putting together a letter to simply say we're not going to meet this date and that we need more time to do this in a thoughtful process. We'd like to have some national agreement on what that thoughtful process entails, but we want to talk about this within the regions first and see the different approaches we're going to take. So I appreciate that feedback, and I will keep everyone updated.
Thank you.
Next up, Terry Alexander, and then Ms. Ware.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Keith, for your presentation. Just making sure I heard you right. Not that it was a mistake on our part, but it was what we could do at the time. If we were to qualify for a remand, the outcome of our Hague discussion might have been different. Is that what you were saying there, or did I take it the wrong way?
Thanks, Terry. No, it wouldn't have been different. I think the point I was trying to make is that, when we ask, when we send something back to the SSC, we're either asking for something because we think they've made a mistake, and that was not the rationale this time, or we're sending it back with new information or a new process or a new policy. And again, we didn't do that either this time. So I just wanted to highlight for the council that the rationale that the SSC provided in their report to reconfirm their recommendation based on 70% FMSY was that they applied the council's control rule, the council's rebuilding plan, the council's risk policy considerations. So they did exactly what the council has asked them to do under these different policies. We didn't give them any different type of information for them to change their mind. So it's really just kind of a reminder to the council that we shouldn't expect a different answer from the SSC if we're not giving them any different tools to work with.
All right, thank you for that. That would be good information for our risk policy presentation on tomorrow. So thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Ms. Ware.
Thanks, Dan. Maybe just two comments on the NOAA risk value matrix here on the screen. The first is just I can already see that there could be easy confusion between risk policy and this risk matrix. We have a matrix in our risk policy that I believe Mid-Atlantic and ASMFC have risk policies. So I'm just wondering if some renaming of this effort might not be worthy as like an optimization matrix, efficiency matrix, whatever it may be. That seems like a easy step for some clarity here on what this is, because I do think they're quite different. And then I don't know when we will get this, but it feels like increasingly understanding the capacity on the federal side is going to be needed for this. And I know that's come up a couple of times, but I'm not sure I've really heard a clear answer. If we get to the end of this and we have 10 species that are high risk, high reward, or however we're labeling them, but there's only science capacity for 7, then I still don't think we've solved the challenge. So I don't know how we get that information, but just throwing it out there, I do think this type of endeavor necessitates a description of federal capacity. Thanks.
Thanks, Megan. Point taken on the name of this. I will say that the name has already changed, and executive directors weighed in that they liked this risk value, but I completely understand that there could be confusion around our developing risk policy. So I will try to clarify anytime I present information on this, the differences between the two. I also take your point on capacity. That is something the executive directors are, we've raised and are including in what we're now drafting is a letter to send to NOAA leadership around, I think the example that you provided, if we still think that we need support for 10 stocks, but there's only support for 7, but then the vice versa of that, that if we narrow down to 10 stocks, but there's capacity to manage 15, have we, have we gone in a direction that it's gone too far? So yes, we are trying to understand and make the request of better characterization of capacity. With the articulated objective from NOAA to narrow the scope of science and management, it's seemingly going in one direction, but we can try to keep asking that question. Thanks.
Mike Pentney.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Anyway, just to that question, if you look at the slide on the board, step 9A is, combine regional matrices into a national matrix. So one of the things that the agency is looking to do as an outcome of this is to see if there's rebalancing of the current distribution of resources, both to the science enterprise and to the management enterprise. So it's very conceivable that, you know, in Megan Ware's example, you know, the New England Council ends up with 10 high risk, high value stocks that need science and management support. And the Science Center says we only have capacity for 7. Well, then that goes into the national matrix. And, you know, then we look to the agency to meet that need. But conversely, as, you know, as Dr. O'Keefe mentioned, if it's the converse, then maybe there's a shift from our region to another region to meet their need. If we have, you know, what might look to some as an overcapacity, although I really can't imagine that would be an outcome. But that's the reason for the national matrix is. And so I think it would be difficult for us as a starting point to, you know, to be working from an assessment of our current capacity on the science or management side. I think it's better to do this objectively and see where we end up and then, add that to the national process.
Thank you for that clarity, Mr. Pentney. Any further questions for Dr. O'Keefe on her report? Seeing none, I will kick it over to the regional administrator, Mike Pentney, for the GARFO report.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. A few things to inform you about, which hopefully most of you are already aware. But on January 13th, we finally published a notice of availability for the revised Amendment 25 to the Groundfish Plan. So obviously, this is the revised and resubmitted amendment to establish 4 stocks of cod instead of the current 2 stocks, with all of the other things that are necessary under the Magnuson Act to manage a stock. The notice is open for 60 days through March 16th. So I'll just note, this is the notice of availability, not the proposed rule. That is still under review, and we hope that will be publishing very soon so that we can get the comment period in sync with the comment period for the NOA. The NOA is what we use to make the decision as to whether to approve, disapprove, or partially approve the amendment. So tracking 30 days out from the close of the comment period, we should be informing the council by April 16th about what our approval, disapproval, or partial approval decision is on the revised Amendment 25. I'm happy to report that on December 8th, we finally published the proposed rule for Framework 69 to the Groundfish Plan. That obviously you all know what that does. Obviously we're pretty late in the fishing year, but the comment period closed on January 7th. And we are working as expeditiously as possible to turn that rule around and get it reviewed at headquarters and hopefully published sooner than the proposed rule, in less time than the proposed rule took, let's put it that way. On December 11th, also very, very, very late, we published the final rule for the 2025 Atlantic herring specifications, which also projected the 2026 and 2027 herring specs and then set river herring and shad catch caps. And so because the final rule was only really in effect for, 20 days, on December 23rd, we published another rule that actually implemented the 2026 specs for herring and the river herring and shad catch caps. So those were all in effect by January 1st. So the 2026 fishing year is, you know, well underway and has their full set of specs for the year. So that's good news. Then sort of following on from that, just a few days into the fishing year, we had to publish a temporary rule implementing the 2,000-pound possession limit in Area 1B for herring. And that was actually effective on January 9th. That's due to the regulations that require we implement that possession limit adjustment once we project the catches has reached 92% of the Area 1B sub-ACL. We were a little bit slow because the landings basically went straight up at the start of the year. So we got to about 150% of the very small Area 1B quota before we were able to get it closed. But so that fishery, that area will remain closed for the remainder of the calendar year. On December 9th, we published the proposed rule for 2026 summer flounder, scup, black sea bass, and bluefish specs. Normally, we have the final rule published by December 31st. This year, we're obviously late. We're still working on getting that review, getting that cleared at headquarters so that the final rule for the summer flounder, scup, and sea bass and bluefish specs will publish. Two more items of note, three. We published a notice of availability on December 29th for surf clam and ocean quahog amendments 21. This is the amendment known as the species separation requirements. So for those of you who follow surf clams and quahogs on the Mid-Atlantic Council, currently the regulations prohibit vessels from mixing trips, landing both quahog and surf clams on the same trip. So this amendment and the regulations, once we eventually implement them, would allow vessels, would provide a path for vessels to land mixed trips. We haven't published the proposed rule for that intentionally because there's more work that we need to do with the fishing industry. We have a couple of EFPs out where we're working with them on different protocols that they will use to assess the catch and make sure that we're able to fully account for surf clams versus quahogs that come in on mixed trips. We did publish the 2026 surf clam and ocean quahog specifications on January 13th for the fishing year 2026. And that also, as we have every year for the last 21 years, suspended the minimum size limit. And then I have one more item that I am happy to report, if I can get my computer to let me in. Sorry about this. Give me 1 second. All right. So finally, we are officially soliciting proposals under the 2026 SCALLOP Research Set-Aside Notice of Funding Availability. Again, this should have published last May, but we finally got it released. So the solicitation is open for 60 days and will close on March 23rd, right before the start of the 2026 fishing year. So we realize that's pretty late timing for the announcement. Obviously, it's almost a year late. So we actually may roll this into 2027. And so we encourage people who are considering submitting proposals under this notice of funding availability to consider 2027 as well. So we may allocate most, if not all, of both the 2026 and 2027 RSA scallops may be awarded under this competition. And then also, because applicants may not have sufficient time to prepare for field work this year, we're acknowledging that field work may need to start in 2027 rather than 2026. So we're trying to be as open as possible to give people opportunity to take advantage of this program. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair, in case there's any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pentney. Any questions for the GARFO report? There you go. Bill Lucy. We don't hear you, Bill. You're still not speaking. I'll come to Eric Hansen, then we'll come back to you, Bill, if you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I have a question on the NOFO for the scallop RSA. When you say you're talking about rolling it into the 27 year, does that mean that there's not going to be another notice of funding opportunity next fall when it usually comes out? Or because there's a lot of responsive things that happen with the RSA, there might be issues that show up, say, in June of this year that need to be investigated that would be, on the docket for funding in 27. If you roll everything together with this notice of funding opportunity, does that preclude any responsiveness or issues that come up in the next few months that aren't on the docket or aren't in on people's minds right now that need to be researched?
Yeah, I understand the question. Good question. I think what we're trying to say is if we get proposals that are pushing forward into 2027, we would consider those even under the 2026 NOFO. And it's possible that if we get a number of good proposals that go through the process and are recommended for funding, that we could fully utilize both the 2026 and 2027 RSA scallops. We would consider that. And I think partially that's a defensive move because it took, you know, we submitted the NOFO in April or May, and it took until January to get it released. We're not clear why, and we're not clear if that would be repeated again in the future. So in order to prevent, you know, in order to, I guess, mitigate the risk that we're in this cycle of it takes 10 months to get a NOFO cleared, we want to provide as much opportunity to fully utilize the 2026 and 2027 RSA as possible. So if we run this competition and there are scallops remaining under the 2027 RSA allocation, you know, we could run another competition, but we just don't know when we would be able to make that happen given, you know, the delays this year.
Now, hopefully the delays are a one-time thing and they've worked out the kinks and they get things back rolling again the way they should be. But I just have reservations on when utilizing the 2027 RSA to solve 2025 problems. I'm sure there are problems in 2026 that will arise that will need to be looked at, and it's nice to be responsive. One of the great things about the RSA program is its responsiveness. And when you bundle it 2 years together, it takes away some of that. I just wanted to flag that for the future.
Understood. Thanks, Herc.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mike, for the update. So Framework 69, I know this is an action that we've all been watching closely and doing the best that we can to help move this along. In most typical situations with groundfish, a proposed rule closes and then a final rule typically is seen within, you know, 30 days, if not earlier, of that public comment period closing. And there's also opportunities to waive periods between proposed rule, final rules. This has been something that's really been critical for the fishing industry to be able to follow the 2022 assessment or the 2024 assessments for haddock and witch flounder, and to use that best available science to get the increases on the quotas that have been very restrictive to the fishing industry. And just curious if there's anything, any opportunity. I mean, this is probably within, maybe this is more at the Secretary of Commerce level, but, you know, how can we move this along faster to make sure that this is something that the industry is able to get an in-season adjustment within the month of February so that the sector program can work and fishermen can fish more efficiently?
Yeah, I mean, to your specific question, how can we move this along faster? I wish I knew the answer to that, because if I did, we would have a lot of other actions that would be moving a lot quicker than they are. Dr. O'Keefe mentioned the letter that the executive directors or all councils wrote to the agency, you know, highlighting this specific issue. And it's not been resolved, and we don't, you know, all we can do at the regional level is turn the final rule package around as quickly as possible, get it in as good shape as possible, and be prepared to answer questions if we are asked. And, you know, we're doing that, and we're not, and then we're just waiting for word that things are cleared and are publishing. And it's just taking more time than normal, for sure.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Looking forward to that final rule. Thank you.
And last up, I have Mr. Lucy. Are you all set with your microphone there?
Can you hear me?
Got you now.
Okay, I had to switch computers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Mike. With the 150% exceedance on the 1B herring quota, was there a concurrent exceedance on the river herring catch cap as well? And if so, by how much?
I would have to check that and get back to you. I'm unaware of any river herring and shad cap exceedance, but let me see if I can pull something up real quick here. No, I'm not seeing anything. Looks like we're cumulative catches, zeros across the board for all four catch cap areas. But that as of January 22nd.
Okay, thank you.
And finally, Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, Dan, Mr. Chairman. Mike, so with that 150% herring, are they required to pay that back next year, or is that something that you just absorb through the whole stock?
So there is a payback provision that would probably happen in 2028, I believe. But I'd have to check with staff who actually know how to do the math to calculate, you know, how that functions. It may not be a pound for pound. It may have to do with whether the overall ACL is exceeded, and I'm just not clear on the specifics of that right now.
All right. Thank you. I would just, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pentney. Up next is General Counsel report, Attorney McDonald. I do not hear you, Mitch. We have you on mute on our end. Want to try it again? Try it again, Mitch. Still not hearing you. It's unmuted on his end. Why don't we maybe switch it off? We'll come back to you, Mitch. I don't know if you just need to maybe restart. If Dr. Hare is willing to jump ahead the line here, I would recognize Dr. Hare for the Science Center report.
Ready to go, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
We got you. Go ahead.
So, perfect. Thank you. So first up, our surveys. At your December meeting, the fall bottom trawl survey was still going on. That survey completed with 258 of the 377 planned stations completed. So that's 68% of stations. And we were able to sample 100% of the survey area. So it was decreasing number of stations per strata, but we were able to sample all strata. And that survey occurred from September 5th to December 9th. The challenges that, you know, the survey encountered were departure delays from the government shutdown, numerous weather events, and some ship repair delays. I really want to give a special thanks to all the staff, 31 from the Science Center, who participated in the legs during the government shutdown, and the officers and crew of Bigelow who worked during the shutdown. And then from the Northeast Fishery Science Center, Michael Ball sort of ran all the shoreside operations. So a lot of effort to get that survey out this past fall. The spring survey, if we've talked about this before, but just to remind everybody, is going to be on Pisces. The Pisces is being prepared to support this survey. All preparations are on track. but there's still a lot of work to do. And Science Center staff are engaging with OMAO staff daily to work and get that survey underway in early March. It will depart from Norfolk to save everyone time and then work from south to north. And then our preparations for the SCOLLOP surveys in 2026, we've got the HABCAM and long-range AUV surveys, both planned. They will be on, the HABCAM will be on Bigelow in May of 2026, and we're also planning the SCOLLOP dredge survey on the Celia, fishing vessel Celia, as we have in previous years. Cooperative research updates. A paper was published coming out of the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel Group looking at the effects of restrictor rope on catch. So that work has been completed. We are seeking groundfish vessels to participate in the conversion factor research. This research is updating the conversion factors for fish size and weight before and after gutting. And a daily stipend is provided to vessels who participate. And if there's interest, they can reach out. People can reach out to me or to Anna Mercer, head of our cooperative research branch. The cooperative research team has also been working to develop monkfish catch per unit effort indices based on data and expertise within the fishing community. And this CPUE product will be reviewed by the New England Council's SSC in March of 2026. We finally, for our cooperative research updates, there is the Northeast Cooperative Research Summit, which will be held February 26th in Riverhead, New York. The event is at capacity, and looking forward to seeing people there to, you know, continue to talk about how we can build cooperative research in the Northeast region. Mr. Salerno talked a little bit about the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel. He mentioned that the next panel meeting is February 12th at Virginia Institute of Marine Science. The regional industry-based bottom trawl survey, the phase one survey, we were going to try to get it on the water with VIMS in mid-September, but we're unable to. So that survey will be going out in spring of 2026, and the NTAP working group has begun designing phase two and the longer-term regional industry-based trawl survey. So work there continues. Observer updates. The biological port sampling was successfully transferred from the regional office to the Science Center. The program launched on October 1st, which created some challenges. From the October to December time period, 70% of samples were collected, and we expect that success rate to increase as the program matures and as we sort of move away from the government shutdown. In terms of the Northeast Fisheries Observer Program, 98% of coverage was accomplished in the October to December time period. Looking at ASM for the 2025 groundfish year, the realized coverage rate is estimated at 84%. In the electronic monitoring programs, currently there are 38 approved vessels enrolled in the audit model program. That's roughly 29% of the active groundfish fishery, and we have an additional 5 vessels that are in process of enrollment. So EM is an open enrollment program, and we'll continue to add vessels each quarter as there is interest. Finally, with regards to electronic monitoring, the Science Center has exercised a 6-month extension of a current contract, extending some work to use machine learning in the analysis of electronic monitoring video data. This extension will focus on further testing of machine learning algorithms to advance automatic identification in the EM programs in the region. Industry-funded SCOLLOP observer coverage is estimated to be at 4.3% this year, with 75% of the task days completed, which is on pace for the year. In terms of assessments, we did a lot of work, as reported in December, to get as much of the council as we could before the shutdown. And after the shutdown, Population Dynamics branch staff have worked with council staff and responded to and delivered requested management support to try to get everything back up to speed. NRCC met. We confirmed the 2026 assessment schedule, which is in March. There will be the peer review for the longfin squid research track that was delayed because of the shutdown. And then there will be management tracks for Atlantic herring, Georgia's Bank haddock, and the longfin squid management track. And then in September, we'll have the American Place and Gulf of Maine haddock management tracks. Looking at 2027, there was some conversation in NRCC. We have not approved the 2027 schedule yet. So we will continue to work. The assessment working group of the NRCC will continue to work on that. We will provide data updates to the New England Council as part of the 2026 assessment work, and that's Atlantic halibut, northern and southern red hake, northern and southern offshore silver hake, and witch flounder. In terms of just protected species, just a brief update. Center released the abundance estimate for North Atlantic right whales. That number is up. Again, a little bit, about a 2% annual increase for the fourth consecutive year. So the population is showing increases. Science Center also released an update to the population viability analysis, which effectively projects the North Atlantic right whale population out into the future. And that update used the most recent mortality and calving estimates. Because mortality recently is down and calving is up, those updated projections are more positive than the previous version of the population viability analysis. 2025-2026 has proven to be a good year for calves. Thus far, there are 21 mom calf pairs have been sighted. That number hasn't been seen since 2011, when 22 mom calf pairs were sighted. So that's a good sign. Calves continue to be born in reasonable numbers. On the other side, in January, one of last year's calves was reported entangled in fishing gear in New England waters, and authorized teams have attempted disentanglement, but the gear is still entangling the whale. In December, another entangled whale was sighted off of Georgia, and again, disentanglement attempts have been attempted using trained responders with some success. So that is, I wanted to give just another two updates, one on wind. We continue to work on implementing the survey mitigation program for offshore wind. The offshore wind sort of has been a fair amount of uncertainty regarding projects going or not going, but Science Center continues to work with developers to establish a survey mitigation program. And then in terms of the ecosystem-based fisheries management, we're not hearing, but at this council meeting, there will be discussion regarding the risk policy, which will integrate products from the Science Center, primarily information from the State of the Ecosystem report. And the State of the Ecosystem group had a workshop recently to finalize the 2026 report. And so that is now in production. And we continue to produce the ecosystem and socioeconomic profiles, working with within the Northeast Fishery Science Center, council staff, and SSC to identify the most efficient products to be included in those ecosystem and socioeconomic profiles. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I will end my report and happy to take any questions.
Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Hare. Any questions for the Science Center report? Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Hare. Early in your presentation, you provided some statistics about the I believe it's 32% of your survey stations, the surveys were not conducted. I'm just trying to get a sense, are those locations New England, Mid-Atlantic, Western Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, Southern New England? I'm just trying to get a sense of what data gaps may exist, especially for those species we manage. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question, Mr. Pierdnock. We are putting together the summary report, so that information will be available to all. But the sort of the station coverage, there was some sort of south of Hudson Canyon where some stations were dropped, but most of the stations that were dropped were north of Hudson Canyon. So again, the greater impacts will be seen on the New England Fisheries Management Council managed species.
What last thing, what's the ETA then for us to see that information?
I mean, it's on the list of things to do. And, you know, so I don't, ETA, certainly before the April council meeting, hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Dr. Hare. Thanks for the presentation. Just curious for 2026 for, Georges Bank Haddock, Gulf of Maine Haddock in place, what will be the assessment process that follows that those management updates? Will there be assessment oversight panels convened, and will they meet to discuss term of reference? What engagement will take place prior to those management updates?
So the managing track assessments, the assessment oversight panel has been paused by the NRCC. But we did talk at the NRCC meeting about holding engagement sessions. And we're still trying to work through the details, but one engagement session would be to help inform the assessments this year, and then another engagement session to inform the assessments that we have planned for 2027. The terms of reference, it'll be a standard management track terms of reference, and I can share those with you if helpful.
Okay. So the engagement sessions, will that include opportunities for council staff, members of the public, as well as Science Center staff and potentially the head of the, the management track itself or the chair of the management track? What will that engagement, who will be involved in that, those engagement sessions?
It'll be like the engagement session. This, you know, it was the first time we tried this engagement session approach was last year. And so I think, you know, the NRCC discussed continuing to build upon that approach. It'll be a public meeting if that is your question.
Yeah. Okay. And then The other question is, the last assessment for management update for Georges Bank Haddock had a lot of, there was already a discussion that took place. I guess it was an engagement meeting that took place last February, last March. And feedback was provided. The council also had provided a lot of feedback on the last Georges Bank Haddock management update model decisions that were made. Is that going to be part of this next review, or is it just going to follow the typical terms of reference for most management updates? I'm just curious if any of the feedback that's been provided to date will be taken into account when considering the terms of reference.
I can say that the feedback provided to date will be taken into account in preparation of the assessment. I think we will use sort of the standard terms of reference for the management track. Exactly everything that's going to be part of that assessment, I can't tell you at this point in time. Planning for that assessment is still ongoing, but I can try to get more information about what can be expected to be part of that management track, and perhaps present that at the next council meeting.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Hare. Thank you for your report. I will move on to Attorney McDonald, if you are there again.
Can you hear me?
Got you now.
Thank you for your patience. All right, I have three procedural updates for this report. The first update involves the New England Fishermen Stewardship Association versus Lutnick case. You may recall that that case challenged the council system, and the Maine District Court upheld the council system, yet still struck down two provisions of the Magnuson Act that the court said provided the council with sort of veto authority over the secretary. And the plaintiffs in that case appealed to the First Circuit. The briefing has been completed in that case. Oral argument is currently scheduled for March 2nd at 9:30 a.m. Held at the Moakley Courthouse in Boston. The second case to report on today involves Relentless Incorporated versus Department of Commerce. You may recall that this is a companion case to Loper Bright that went up to the Supreme Court and then was remanded. The Relentless case started in the District of Rhode Island, went up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court remanded it to the First Circuit, which then remanded it again to the District of Rhode Island. This case is now at the First Circuit. Briefing is underway. The appellants filed their brief on around January 16th. We're waiting for that to be docketed by the First Circuit. Once that's docketed, then the government has 30 days to reply. And then after the government replies, then the appellants will have an opportunity to reply 21 days following the government's brief. There have been amicus briefs filed with the circuit court, seven of them to date. Those are friends of the court briefs that are filed by different organizations. And in this case, there are numerous organizations that I won't identify specifically, unless you have specific questions. The third case involves the Cape Cod Charter Boat Association versus the ASMFC. This was a challenge to the striped bass addendum that was approved on January 24th back in 2024. This was filed in the District Court of the District of Columbia. And the plaintiffs complained that they were entitled to relief due to unconstitutional and inaccurate scientific data, unconstitutional federal government commandeering the ASMFC, and then also not the ASMFC not relying on accurate scientific data. There was a motion to dismiss filed by the government that was granted by the court. Subsequent to that, the plaintiffs appealed, and that briefing is underway. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Attorney McDonald. Any questions on the general counsel report?
Or not?
Or not. Thank you once again, Mr. McDonald. And we'll move on to Mr. Platts with the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll see if I can do a little better this time with the report. Starting with Atlantic Mackerel, the MID adopted a revised rebuilding plan and specs for Atlantic Mackerel. The revised plan will allow catches, higher catches, while continuing to rebuild the stock by 2032. Commercial quotas will increase to 11,237 metric tons or 24.8 million pounds for 2026. 2027 quota will be 13,210 metric tons or 29.1 million pounds. These quotas will allow substantially higher trip limits, including a 200,000 pound limit for tier one vessels. The council did not recommend any modifications to the existing 129 metric ton cap on incidental catch of river herring and shad.
To fully utilize the quota, the fishery must remain below the combined river herring shad bycatch rate of 0.75% on typical mackerel trips. The council also voted to increase the federal recreational limit to 25 fish for private boats and 50 fish for the for hire fleet. Moving to spiny dogs, consistent with the action taken by the New England Council at its last meeting, the MID did not adopt the 105% closure measure, thereby allowing the balance of the elements of the framework to move forward jointly. Summer flounder, the council and board followed the percent change approach as outlined in Framework 19, Amendment 36. The council and board agreed that no change is required in the recreational harvest of summer flounder in 2026 or 27. Non-coastwide measures include 18.5-inch minimum size, three fish possession limit, and open season from May 8 till September 30. Measures for 2027 will be reviewed in 26, but are expected to remain unchanged, barring the advent of unforeseen new data. On SCUP, likewise, the council and board decided the percent change approach requires no change to the recreational harvest of SCUP for 26 and 27. The council and board agreed that no change is required for federal waters measures. Status quo measures are expected to remain in place in 2026. Measures for 2027 will be reviewed in 2026, but no changes are currently anticipated. On sea bass, the updated confidence interval for black sea bass is much wider than those for summer flounder and scup. It is also wider than the confidence intervals used in previous years for all three species. The degree of difference was not anticipated prior to the availability of updated recreational demand model results, but can be explained by differences in the input data. Specifically, the black sea bass stock assessment recently transitioned to the Woods Hole assessment model, which characterizes uncertainty differently. The council and board ultimately approved a 20% liberalization, which will be implemented in 26, with 2027 measures remaining unchanged unless new information suggests a major change in the expected impacts. The council and board agreed to waive federal measures in favor of state measures. Non-preferred coastwide measures consist of a 14-inch minimum fish size, a five fish possession limit, and an open season from June 1 to August 31. Precautionary to default measures remain unchanged. Moving on to sector separation, there was a lot of discussion on this at the mid-meeting. The council met jointly with the Commission's Interstate Fisheries Management Program and Policy Board to review and provide guidance on revised draft alternatives for the recreational sector separation amendment for summer flounder, scup, black sea bass, and bluefish. This amendment considers two main issues, the separate for hire and private mode management measures or strategies, and for hire permitting and reporting requirements. Development of a draft amendment and public hearing document was delayed to hold a workshop in 2026 to further refine the alternatives. In addition, the Council and Policy Board removed from consideration an option that would have required states to consider or implement state-level mode management during the recreational measures setting process. They intend to further explore an option that would adopt uniform guidelines and best practices for implementing mode management at the state and or federal levels. The workshop will also cover the remaining options related to the for-hire LOA program. The group discussed but did not approve removing bluefish from the amendment and pursuing further development of LOA options for options only for summer flounder and black sea bass. The council also approved 2026 implementation plan outlining anticipated work for the upcoming year. The mid-council added an action to evaluate and provide guidance on the use of confidence intervals and the role of uncertainty in the percent change approach. The implementation of a mesh selectivity study for Atlantic mackerel was added to the possible additions section of that plan. Like the NEFMC and the South Atlantic Council, the MID has at least one project that will review, evaluate, and potentially recommend modifications to cross-jurisdictional governance processes, advisory body structure and use, and the cooperative management agreements. And that's pretty much it from the MID. That meeting was almost 6 weeks ago now. But if there's any questions, I'd be glad to try and at least answer them. Maybe Mr. Pierdnock or Melanie could help with that process if I'm struggling.
Thank you, Mr. Platts. Great job there. Anything to add, Mr. Rule? Guess not. I guess you did a great job there, Ted. Any questions for Ted on the Mid-Atlantic report? Seeing none. Great job, Ted. Up next is Tony Kearns with the ASMFC report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The commission has not met since the last time I provided an update to the council, so I'll just give a brief overview of what we will be doing for some species on at our meeting next week. We will begin on Tuesday, February 3rd at 9 a.m. with the lobster board. And at that meeting, the board will receive an update on Jonah crab, looking, and they'll consider the update, which uses indicators to assess the Jonah crab stock between stock assessments. The board will also get an update from NOAA Fisheries on where they are for the request for information on the alternative gear marking framework. The winter flounder board will set specifications, primarily based on the specifications that were set from the council at your last meeting, I believe it was, although the commission will only set 3-year specs because that's what we have in our FMP. The technical committee did not make any recommendations to change management measures in state waters for winter flounder, although they did note that there is a disconnect in sort of how the two bodies set regulations, with a set aside going to the state water fisheries. And if the states did want to change management measures, it could be a disconnect there. For spiny dogfish, we'll set specifications for the next two fishing years, as well as review actions that were taken by the two councils on the accountability measures framework. It's possible that the board could initiate an addendum to address any changes in our FMP that would be needed as a result of that framework, but typically the board waits until after the frameworks have been approved by NOAA Fisheries before taking action. And then lastly, the Atlantic Menhaden Board will provide feedback to the plan development team that is working on developing a draft addendum that looks at some fishery measures within the Chesapeake Bay. And that is all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Kearns. Any questions for Tony? Seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Kearns. Up next, we have the U.S. Coast Guard report. I believe Lieutenant Commander Hale, you'll be giving this presentation.
Good morning. Correct, sir. I will be on behalf of Lieutenant Blyfus, who's been called away on other operations. So it's like coming on after the Beatles, I feel, but I'll try. But so good morning, Chair, Council members and partners. On behalf of Coast Guard Northeast District, I'm Lieutenant Commander Hale. Thanks for the opportunity to provide a brief operational update on our fisheries enforcement, some safety and search and rescue efforts across New England. So as you see here, since December of 25, our crews have conducted 50 commercial fishing vessel safety boarding or commercial fishing vessel boardings, resulting in 13 fishery violations. That puts the OCR at roughly 90%, which speaks strongly to the professionalism of the fleet and the effectiveness of the management measures that have been put in place. Most of the enforcement issues we've seen continue to center around reporting and notification requirements, as well as VMS compliance, the smaller number tied to the species and area violations. Next slide, please. These trends reinforce that compliance is largely high, but the continued emphasis on electronic reporting accuracy and VMS functionality remains critical for us throughout the Northeast. Next slide, please. From a safety perspective, we conducted 54 dockside safety exams and issued 52 commercial fishing vessel safety decals while completing 50 safety boardings at sea. 8 total safety violations were issued on board 6 individual vessels, with the most common being the survival craft, emergency suit, and PFD discrepancies. We also noted isolated fire and firefighting equipment issues, along with documentation and drill-related items. Our observed safety compliance rate currently sits at 88%, which is, again, reflects a generally strong safety culture within the fleet, while highlighting that life-saving equipment readiness remains one of our greatest opportunities for improvement. Next slide, please. Thank you. In terms of search and rescue, the Coast Guard responded to 70 fishing vessel-related incidents and casualties during the December period. These included disabled, adrift, anchored vessels, groundings, and vessels taking on water. There are no elisions reported, and our crews were able to save 11 lives throughout the time period. We also had 0 medevacs or medicos in December related to fishing vessels, which is a positive indicator of onboard safety and operational readiness. Taken together, these numbers tell a consistent story. The New England fishing fleet continues to demonstrate long compliance and strong compliance and a serious commitment to safety. Where violations do occur, they are generally administrative, equipment readiness related, or tied to electronic compliance systems, rather than willful or high-risk behavior. This gives us confidence that the partnership between the council, industry, and enforcement agency is working. Moving forward, our focus will remain on education and engagement, especially in these three areas: reporting and notification, accuracy, VMS compliance and functionality, and as stated, survival equipment and readiness and crew preparedness. These are the areas where small improvements can have outsized impacts on safety, compliance, and overall operational effectiveness. We appreciate the council's continued collaboration and support. Shared objective remains the same: sustainable, safe, and compliant fishery that protects both lives and resources. Thank you again for letting me fill in for Tom Blyfus. We look forward to continuing this partnership, standing by to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you to Lieutenant Commander Hale, and a great job filling in for Lieutenant Blyfus while he is the Beatles. I think you're second up there. Any questions for Lieutenant Commander Hale on the Coast Guard report? Seeing none, thank you for your report, Lieutenant Commander, and thank you for the service that you and your compatriots do. Up next is Caleb Gilliber with the NOAA OLE report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Fantastic. Morning, council members. Caleb Gilbert, compliance liaison for the Northeast Division of NOAA Fisheries Office of Law Enforcement. I've got a fairly brief report today I'll provide as quickly as I can, and happy to take questions when I'm done. We're still in the process of updating our FY26 regional priorities. I know I mentioned at the December meeting that I might be able to convey those to the council today. Unfortunately, I don't have those yet. Hopefully, I'll be able to provide an update on those at the April meeting. I'm moving on to our trade enforcement work since the December meeting. So far in FY2026, OLE in the Northeast Division has conducted a total of 29 trade monitoring patrols or operations. So that's since October 1st of last year. We conducted 17 new trade monitoring patrols or operations since the last meeting in December. There's no new closed cases to report to the council at this time, but our current related casework is substantial. Moving on to our enforcement support of North Atlantic right whale conservation, our work on speed rule enforcement continues to help alleviate the threat of ship strikes. Earlier this month, a Division 2 special agent closed a right whale speed rule case with a NOVA penalty involving violations that occurred in November and December 2023 and January and March 2024. The violations involved a container ship tanker vessel based out of the UK. Regarding our enforcement efforts to deter gear entanglement with all large right whales, including right whales, Division 1 enforcement officer recently closed a case where a NOVA penalty was issued for Atlantic large whale take reduction plan violations identified on a Lobster Management Area 3 patrol, one of our contracted fixed gear patrols we conducted in October of 2024. Take reduction plan violations by this vessel identified by our enforcement officer involved failure to meet the minimum number of traps per trawl, no vertical line color marking, and no weak breaking strength line. Also, General Counsel recently issued a charge for a wet storage violation identified by a Division 1 enforcement officer and our D1 supervisor enforcement officer while on one of the mid-range Lobster Management Area 1 OLE patrols that we conducted last June. If you don't recall, I think I mentioned the previous council, maybe the one before that in September, OLE conducted a number of mid-range in LMA 1 and offshore LMA 3 patrols on board contracted fixed gear patrol vessels last year. I'm still working on tabulating the take reduction plan compliance rate based on related patrols conducted in the fourth quarter of FY25. I can report on some related metrics for that quarter now. From July 1st through September 30th last year, OLE and a number of our enforcement partners conducted a very large number of take reduction plan focused patrols. Maine Marine Patrol, of course, conducts the majority of those, but Delaware Natural Resource Police, Massachusetts Environmental Police, New Hampshire Fish and Game, and Virginia Marine Police all contributed alongside OLE to conduct 71 Atlantic large whale take reduction plan focused patrols in that quarter. A quick update on our enforcement efforts in support of our observer program. Those efforts within the Northeast Division continue to support the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Earlier this month, Division 2 special agent closed an observer refusal case after a vessel paid a summary settlement in late December of last year. Moving on, another case I'd like to report to the council today involves the owner of two vessels charged with a novel penalty where the vessels were found to have operated with significant negative scallop IFQ balances over the course of many trips taken between April 1st and October 7th, 2024. Those were limited access general category vessels based in New Jersey. And the final item I have to report to the council today involves VMS. Thought it might just be worth alerting to the council that NIMS identified a software glitch on January 1st affecting only the Woods Hole Group VMS declarations and forms. It was a global software glitch. So while vessel positions were not impacted, the glitch caused data processing errors due to incorrect year timestamps. This may be more detail than everyone needs to hear, but a workaround is currently in place and the vendor has successfully reprocessed all the affected data. And I guess there's Woods Hole Group is still working on a permanent fix, but that should be forthcoming very shortly. Over 100 trip corrections have been sent to GARFO to ensure accurate accounting. And I'll just say OLE encourages vessel owners to monitor their trip emails and report any discrepancies, though they should continue submitting all required VMS forms as usual. Again, this glitch was exclusive to Woods Hole Group users. It did not impact other VMS providers or subscribers to other VMS providers like SkyMate or MetOcean. And that's all I have to report today, Mr. Chairman. Happy to take any questions if anyone has them.
Thank you for your report, Mr. Gilbert. Any questions for Caleb? Seeing none. Thank you very much for your report, Caleb.
My pleasure.